Thank you, Dennis, very apropos to the song for this lesson. As Rick said from the Revelation, it holds a lot that in the meaning, everything makes sense. Because in reality, of everything that goes on in the world all the time, people say, well, I don't know what the future holds. Sure you do. Because it's two words. You've heard me say it before. Now let's sing it. God wins. It's all right there. And that, you know what? That makes sense. God wins. Rather, you want to acknowledge the being God, or you want to say, yeah, something out there. Which I hear quite a bit of time, unfortunately, it hurts me. Yeah, there's something out there, but I don't know what to call it. Recognize God wins. Well, this lesson this morning is a little bit different. Of course, you come to recognize everything is a little bit different when I get up here. By request, I'm going to do something that I've wanted to do for a long time. But we're going to take a walk through history that actually turns into the future, that actually becomes where we are today and what we should be considering today. And that with the seven churches. I have some folks have asked me over quite a number of years now, let's talk about the churches. Well, I'm not going to capitalize on one today. I'm going to get all seven of them. Because there's a message within all seven of those letters that is that these seven churches, they were picked for a purpose. But I'll reach back on that statement again later. The letters were written to these seven churches not to condemn the churches. Even though as we look at it, we say, well, five of them, according to the letters, were really messing up. These letters, all seven of the letters were not written, all seven of the statements made by Jesus, because guess what? Jesus was the writer, the person that put it on paper. Jesus was dictating to. These are not letters from John. These are letters from God to those churches. Because remember, every time, and we're going to see that every time as we read through all these statements to these churches, to the church at Ephesus, right. To the church at Smyrna, right. John isn't making this stuff up. These are letters from God to his people. This is the greatest story there ever was. These letters were not written to condemn, but to encourage and correct. And that's why I said we're going to walk through a little bit of history, but that history suddenly, it becomes this big light that stretches from there, that specific place, because every last one of these churches, they're real. They're not made up. They're not a little story. They're real places. And it stretches, and that light from that letter is going to stretch all the way from that point there, and it's going to go through us all the way to the future. Because it's just as valid then as it is now, as it will be then. So the letters were not written to condemn, but yet to encourage and correct the deficiencies. A lot of what we had and what those churches were experiencing was because of Roman rule. Now, where were these churches? I told you I would touch on that because it's really important the reason why these seven churches were chosen. Were they the only? Absolutely not. Because what was being capitalized on, what we're going to see as we touch on these letters, is that a lot of the problems were as a result of persecution. By whom? By Rome. When were these letters written? At the time when the Roman emperors were suddenly becoming into this mindset of, hey, I'm God. Because guess what? Hey, I am God. Worship me. And they were doing stuff that was really... The churches were being, the people, the Christians, the churches, but the Christians become very, very afraid of their situation in life. Because they knew they weren't supposed to be worshiping this man. They knew that they weren't supposed to be worshiping and giving honor to these statues. But they also knew that if they got caught outwardly not doing it or compromising their morals and their laws, that they would die. So there was a lot of cooling off, a lot of compromise, a lot of going underground. Yeah, I've been to some of the underground churches in Italy. They're kind of fascinating, but that's an aside. So it was very widespread. It was tough to really subsist. But I think, why were those seven churches chosen to spread the word? Because they were the best way to spread the word. The seven churches that we see in the Revelation, again, I'm going to touch on them. I really will get to it. The seven churches that we see in the Revelation are all situated on a trade circuit. One of the most heavily used Roman trade circuits, because Smyrna and Ephesus were the main anchors for this road, because they were both major seaports. This area still exists, it's just not called Asia Minor anymore, now it's called Turkey. And so there are physical ruins. I know I showed this about 10 years ago. There are physical ruins of some of these places, and Ephesus, as a matter of fact, when they opened up to build this street where the Ephesus existed, they opened up the street, they found the church and the city under the current city. So they put a big fence around it, it's a big museum. It's one of the best preserved, but it's still there. And yet, all of these places did exist. And they were all on this trade route. Now, I say, I get very excited about that, but why? Because they're on this trade route. How is the best way to switch from place to place? And not only on that circuit, but now it spreads out. Because if you stay on that little trade route, you're gonna lose money. Your livelihood's gonna die out. And there's areas outside. It's like taking downtown San Diego and saying, that's all the world there is. But then what happens to us? I'm not in downtown. I'm in one of those little spread outs. But in the downtown areas where a lot of the trade happens, where a lot of the stuff comes in, and so it's got to be spread out. This is why these places were selected. This is why these places, it's kind of an odd thing to say, but fortunately they had problems. And so they gave God something to do. They gave God something to spread. They gave God something to say, hey, look it, here's what you need to do. Now spread the word. Now remember I said at the beginning, these letters were not written to condemn. They were written to encourage. They were written to correct. That's what they were done. Now we'll start with the church at Ephesus. I told you I'm going to get to it. I really will. He said, these are the words of him who holds the seven stars in his right hand. The stars mean his power. The stars stand for authority. And the words seven, of course, is the number of completion. He walks among the seven golden lampstands. He says, I know your deeds, your hard work, and your perseverance. He said, I know that you cannot tolerate wicked men, that you have tested those who claim to be apostles, but have found them to be false. You've persevered and endured the hardships of my name, and you've not grown weary. That's a lot of good stuff. He says, church at Ephesus, look at what you're doing. He says, you're hanging in there. You're going forward. You've had a lot of this stuff creeping in, and you're going, that's all right, get out. He says, that's good. That's the good part. Remember, praise first, okay? He says, yet I hold this against you. You have forsaken your first love. Now, what does that truly mean? Well, he explains it. He says, remember the height from which you have fallen. He says, repent, do the things you did at first. If you don't repent, I'll come and remove your lampstand. What he said, you've lost your first love. What does that truly mean? That means that as you read through and you say, okay, now I've got to have this issue. What is he talking about? He's talking about the power and the fire that was on when you first came in. You're way up here on this high peak. You're, oh, everything is great. It's wonderful. We love you, God. I understand all of the things you've done for me. And then you got complacent and started sliding down the mountain. And now instead of this big flame, you got a little flicker going on. He says, you gotta get yourself in gear and you gotta figure out what's going on. Because this is kind of a one of those outward visual things. People see the fire going on. People see the excitement. And now you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, just another day in the neighborhood. Got to go over here and meet with the brothers, man. Whatever. That was Ephesus. But you know how damaging that is? He says, I don't want to have somebody say, gee, if that's what Christianity is all about, I want no part of it. And it's really, really subtle. They're not really doing anything evil, because look at what he said in the first couple of verses. He said in the first couple of lines of the letter, he's saying, I know what you did. You're great. You're holding out. No matter what the Romans throw at you, no matter what the trade deals throw at you, you're holding out. You're doing good. You're catching all these people that are coming in and going, yeah, you should be doing that. You should be doing that. You should be repenting. You should be believing in God. You should be reading the word. You should be being baptized. We'll do it tomorrow. They're catching those people and throwing them out. They're not letting them get in there, kind of twist it around a little bit. We've seen that happen over the years. That's why I said, I'm going to take and say all of these things. Guess what? It stretches through us out into eternity. We've seen that happen over a few years. It's coming back. It's coming back to a fire and a strength. We've seen it happen where it's just, I want it to be a religion of convenience. I want to have my drive-in church. Anybody remember the drive-in church? I want to have the drive-in church. I don't want to have this great commitment. I don't want to be seen or heard by anybody else, but I'm going to go do my thing, and that'll be good enough, right? I want to have my televangelist. Very, very easy. I don't want to have my commitment. I'll listen to you, man. You're a good speaker, but I want to be able to go and make get a milkshake or get a good bowl of popcorn. Yeah, to the popcorn. I love long commercial breaks. But that was Ephesus. And see, he said, if you don't get yourself in gear, get back up on the top of the mountain, I'm going to close you down. That's what that means. I'm going to come and take your lampstand. I'm going to close you down. I'm going to get your attention. That's Ephesus. He said, and then he said, now, the next one, he says, he's talking to the church at Smyrna. I want you to notice this one. This is fun. The angel at the church of Smyrna, he's writing these words. From him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you're rich. He says, I know the slander of those who say that they are Jews and are not, but they're of the synagogue of Satan. Don't be afraid of what you're about to suffer, for I tell you, the devil will put some of you in prison and test you, and you will suffer persecution for 10 days. Be faithful even to the point of death, and I'll give you the crown of life. You hear any bad stuff? No. Smyrna's one of those places doing it right. Smyrna's one of those places, and when he's talking about, he says, I know your poverty and your afflictions. Smyrna was having a whole lot of problems with trade guilds, because they absolutely, positively refused to join the guild of Artemis, the Roman god. So they were losing business. They were being fired. Their businesses were being closed down. They were suffering. And it was the business of the other churches to take care of them. They were having a hard time. He said, I see your poverty, and I know that you're, again, they're looking at this one. You know, I see what these other people are saying, and it's not right, so we're gonna kick them out. Now, I wasn't there, and I don't see, and it's not here in the scripture, but I will tell you that there's a lot of what was going on where he says that some of these are coming in and saying that they're Jews, that they're not. There was a lot of Judaizing going on, a lot of trying to split up and break down the church, not only here and other, but by coming in and saying, well, you can't be part unless you do this and this, binding Jewish law on the Christians and confusing them. Because these people are not Jewish converts. These people are Gentile new babies. And they're very confused. And they're taking whatever they're told to be the truth. And sometimes it was a lot of stuff being bound on them, and they were backing away because they didn't want to have to do that. It was hard enough for the Jews to convert to Christianity. I know it would be for me. But then to have people that come in that don't know anything, never heard of this God, and to be told, oh, you're not doing enough, you also gonna do this. It's gonna scare them to death. If I was told that all the things that we know, that we do, that we see, we read, it's preached every week, and somebody comes in and says, oh, by the way, you also have to build this little hut and live in it for a week because there's a festival that's associated with that. Oh, by the way, you also have to go out on and get this sheep, this lamb, and you have to kill it and you have to cook it in a certain way and eat it in a certain way because there's a festival associated with it. Oh, and you also have to do that. The myriad of rules and regulations for the Jews are Jewish rules, but they were trying to put it on these people to scare them to death. He says, hold firm. They had no issues. They had no issues at all. But he's saying, I'm going to encourage you. There's, remember, not written to condemn, but rather written to encourage and correct. And then get that spread out there. Great people. He's significantly, Christians are persecuted worldwide. We know, we've heard that. We do hear it. I love to hear people are concerned about it. Because we can't not be concerned. This persecution that Smyrna was going through is current. It's real. I've seen it. Many of us here have been to some of those areas where it's dangerous. It's really dangerous. A bit, you know. Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. It's a resort destination. It's also very dangerous if the wrong people find out you're a Christian. The church there is only open once a year, and that's when the government decides that they'll take the chains and locks off the doors. That stuff is still happening. It's going to still happen. It's going to keep on going. Persevere. Keep going and be strong because the end result is the best you'll ever get. And I still can't wrap my head around forever. Just can't do it. The next one is the church at Pergamum, some writing called Pergamos. He says, I know where you live, where Satan has his throne. This place is really interesting. Yet you remain true to my name. You did not renounce your faith, even in the days of Antipas, a Roman ruler who was really horrible. You think Nero was bad, burning Christians in his garden as lanterns? This guy was ruthless. My faithful witnesses was put to death in your city where Satan lives. Nevertheless, that's it. So they're right there, and you can see that they're being kind of put down. There's some thumbs on their head being pushing them down and really scaring the daylight.